Hey, it's NPR's Book of the Day. I'm Andrew Limbong. A big name author on the pod means I don't gotta do much heavy lifting. You know who Salman Rushdie is, right? He wrote Midnight's Children, The Satanic Verses, more recently, Victory City. You also likely know that he was attacked, stabbed on stage in 2022. He's kept pretty low-key since the attack, you know, low-key for Rushdie, but now he's ready to talk. His new memoir recounting that event and what his life has been like since is titled Knife. And he talked to NPR's Mary Louise Kelly about not just the attack, but surviving and where this whole ordeal has left him spiritually. That's ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Salman Rushdie is a writer, a storyteller. So when you ask him to tell the story of the day in 2022, when he was attacked and nearly killed by a young man with a knife, Rushdie paints a vivid picture.
I saw this man rise out of the audience.
You're at the lectern at this point. You stepped on
No,
the
we
stage.
Were sitting in chairs on the stage with a little table between us. And this man got up out of the audience and came towards the stage. There's a few steps up. And then he started sprinting. He just sprinted up the steps and came at me. And I immediately thought, oh, it's actually happening.
What Salman Rushdie is referring to is the fatwa, a response to his 1988 novel, The Satanic Verses. Iran's supreme leader issued a ruling the following year ordering Muslims to kill Rushdie. He lived in hiding for a while, police protection 24 hours a day. But around the turn of the century, Rushdie says, the Iranians, quote, called off the dogs.
And ever since then, there really hasn't been much risk. You know, I came to live in New York early in the year 2000, and I've been here ever since. And I've done hundreds of public events, you know, talks, readings, lectures, discussions, without there ever being the faintest murmur of a problem. And so I had really come to feel that, okay, this is ancient history.
But on that day, your first thought was, okay, it's you. You're here.
Yeah, here
finally.
You are. After, it felt like it. I say in the book something to the effect that it felt like he was a time traveler, somebody emerging out of the past.
Rushdie writes about the attack in his memoir, out this week, titled Knife. When he came to talk with me about it in our New York bureau the other day, he wore glasses that obscured his right eye, which was blinded in the stabbing.
I thought he hit me. I never saw the knife. I didn't realize that there was a weapon in his hand until I saw the blood coming out.
How many times did he stab you?
I've been trying to work it out. I mean, I think it's at least 12. It might be 13 or 14. I keep trying to count them, and I lose count.
You describe lying on the floor. You're in a huge pool of your own blood. And that your overwhelming emotion, it wasn't fear, it wasn't pain, it was extreme loneliness.
Yeah, because I thought, you know, here I am in the middle of, I mean, upstate New York, almost in Canada, very far from everyone I love, dying as I thought I was dying in the company of strangers. And that felt...
On a stage.
On a stage.
Yeah.
That felt worse than the dying. And, I mean, I'm lucky that I got away with it. I think I'm very lucky that I got away with it. I mean, I was lucky for a start that there was this trauma hospital just across the state line in Pennsylvania that in a helicopter was quite close. I mean, I was lucky that it was a sunny day. If it had been rainy and stormy, the helicopter would not have been able to fly, and then I'd be dead.
There's something so odd about hearing you describe anything about that day as lucky, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, that one of the surgeons who had operated on me said, you know, first you were very unlucky and then you were very lucky. And I said, well, what's the lucky part? And he said, the lucky part is that the man who attacked you had no idea how to kill a man with a knife. And it's true. I mean, if you look at the injuries, I mean, they were basically, he was flailing around, just putting the knife everywhere he could think of. I mean, he came very close to killing me, but he didn't.
You never use his name, either now or in the book. You call him the A for what? The attacker, the assassin.
The attacker, the assailant, the adversary, and ruder words that begin with A.
Okay, leave that to people's imaginations.
I think most people can imagine it.
You recount in the book, and I'll leave it to people to read, the long two steps forward, one step back of your recovery. Mm-hmm. You're sitting before me now, April 2024. How are you?
I'm not so bad, thank you. I mean, there are things that are not going to get better. Like, I mean, my right eye is not coming back.
It was the worst of your wounds.
That was, yeah,
because, which is saying something.
Because the wound, because the knife went, I mean, went all the way to the optic nerve. And if you damage the optic nerve, there's nothing to be done. And the left hand, I mean, it's better in the sense that I've got a lot of movement back.
Yeah, you're opening and closing your fingers.
Yeah, I can do that. But there's still like almost no feeling in my middle two fingers here.
So you're alive.
I'm alive.
Your wounds were such that, as you have already suggested, you maybe shouldn't be.
Yeah.
How does that have you thinking? I mean, it's a miracle in a way. And you're someone who has
never believed in miracles.
Exactly. Where does that leave you?
Except my books believe in them. My books are full of them. So maybe my books allowed the miracles to cross over from fiction into fact.
Has it changed your thinking at all in terms of faith, God? Is there a higher power out there that made sure I would get through this?
No, ma'am. I mean, one of the things that is interesting about that near-death experience is that there was nothing supernatural about it. No choirs of angels, no tunnel of light, nothing like that. It was just somebody physically lying on the ground bleeding to death. So I thought, well, that suggests to me that maybe I'm not wrong. What it does do, getting that close to death and then coming back from it, is it gives you an immensely increased sense of the value of every day of life.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Just immensely. Just wake up in the morning and you think, still here.
Go back to your writing again, because as people who have read your fiction will know well, all kinds of magical things do happen in your writing. Mm. Your characters do things that do not align in any way with reality or science. Mm-hmm. Why do you let yourself do things in writing that you don't allow yourself to believe in life?
Well, because I think that realism as a literary form is not a sufficient way to describe the craziness of the world. The world is insane, as we see every day on the news. And realism is a wonderful form, but it doesn't allow you to accept that the world is now not realistic. The world is surreal. And surrealism seems to me to be closer to the real. That's what I think I'm doing.
Is this you using what you do best, using language as your own knife in a way?
Yes, exactly. That's what the book is called Knife, not only because it's about a knife, but because it is a knife. It's, you know, I got myself into a knife fight somehow. I had to have a knife of my own.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit their website to get a quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. Then, just choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
One of the most striking things about Rushdie's memoir is that it's actually mostly about how much he loves his wife, the poet and novelist Rachel Eliza Griffiths. He calls her Eliza. And there's a really intense moment in this next part of the interview where Rushdie visits the site where he was stabbed and says how important it was for him to not be alone.
In Salman Rushdie's new memoir, there is a clear villain. It's a young man wielding a knife who leapt from the audience and stabbed and almost killed Rushdie on a stage in upstate New York in August of 2022. There is also a clear hero to the story, Rushdie's wife, Eliza.
You know, it's a very interesting thing to find love late in life. And I wasn't expecting it. In fact, I was actively not expecting it.
Rushdie was already in his 70s when he married for a fifth time in 2021. When he stopped by our studios in New York the other day to talk about his new book, Knife, he spoke of being so entranced, so distracted the night he met Rachel Eliza Griffiths that he managed to walk into a glass door.
Roof terrace, sliding glass out onto the terrace. And I said, let's go out and look at the view. Nice summer evening.
It's romantic.
And so she went out ahead of me and through the sliding door that was open. And I was so distracted that I didn't notice that the other half of the sliding door was shut. And so I walked wham into it and fell down and my glasses cut my nose. And so there's blood coming down my nose. And it was very dramatic. And I was lying there thinking, do not pass out.
Hold yourself together.
Yeah, which I didn't. And then, you know, later on, when this appalling attack happened, it seemed like that meeting with Eliza had been like a comic prefiguring of this, which also involved falling down, glasses cutting your nose.
The prefiguring he's talking about, the foreshadowing, is of the violent attack that nearly killed him 20 months ago. He was stabbed at least a dozen times. Rushdie says he keeps trying to count and loses track. On the program yesterday, we heard how he's doing. Basically, he was left blind in one eye, left with almost no feeling in two fingers on his left hand. But ask Rushdie, the most upsetting thing about the attack? That it has turned him once again into somebody he has tried very hard not to be.
You write in Knife about how for the 33 plus years since Ayatollah Khomeini issued the fatwa calling for your death, that you have fought against being defined as the guy with the fatwa on him. And that you've come to realize no matter what you do, no matter how glorious a book you have ever written or ever will write, this is what you'll be known for. And now additionally as the guy who got knifed.
Yeah, I know. This is the big damage to my work as a writer. You know,
is it? Because it seems like you're making lemonade out of lemons here.
Well, I'm trying to do that. But, you know, I've spent most of my 50 years of my life trying to be a novelist. And what this whole episode from 1989 until now has done is in a way to turn people's attention away from my novels. And, you know, some of them are quite good. And I would like people to have a look at them. And that frustrates me, that for many people, this subject is so, because it's a big news subject, you know, it's so prominent in people's minds that what my books are like is somewhere further to the back of their interest.
Mm. Although it's also possible that a whole new generation picked up the satanic verses because of this.
Yeah, that's possible.
Not that one would have wished that was the way
they came
to it. I
always tell people not to read that book first because it has too much baggage around it. You know, I say read something else. Read the most recent novel, Victory City. Read Midnight's Children back at the other end of my life. Read Harun and the Sea of Stories, which I wrote for my young son. I mean, when you've got 22 books sitting on a bookshelf, there's a lot of ways into a writer's life.
Do you feel safe now?
Well, I feel safe partly because, yes, I feel safe, and partly because we've been sensible. We've taken steps to make things safer. You know, I mean, it's probably not a good idea to talk about security on the primetime media. But
we don't need to get into the details of your measures you may be taking.
There's a thing that has become significant again in a way that it hadn't been. So, yeah, we're taking care.
Chapter 8 in this book is titled Closure with a question mark. Mm. And I want you to tell me about going back 13 months later to the exact place where you attacked. Yeah. Why do that to yourself?
Well, because it just became for me a kind of I don't want to say obsession, but it became very important for me, I thought, to tell myself that I was standing up in the place where I fell down. I just thought it would mean a lot to me. I mean, Eliza wasn't delighted about it.
She came with you, your wife?
Yeah, she sat down. She said, you're not going by yourself. But I was absolutely determined to do it. And when I was standing on the stage, I mean, I shouldn't tell you because it spoils the end of the book, but when I was standing on the stage, I had this physical sense of somebody lifting a weight from my shoulders. It felt like somebody came and lifted a burden off me. And I said to Eliza, I said, I don't know why, but actually I feel lighter. Mm. And that's more than I had hoped that it would do, but that's what it did.
I love, too, you just told me you wanted to stand where you had fallen down.
Yeah.
You also talked about how alone you felt in the moment of the stabbing and to go back and not be alone.
Not be alone was very important because Eliza had never been there, so she didn't know what it looked like. So she'd had to imagine it. So for her to see it for real, that was difficult for her also. For both of us, I think it was an important moment.
Well, I will bring us to a close by noting yours is not a laugh out loud funny book on many levels, but I did laugh out loud as you're describing that scene of going back, standing where you had fallen down on that stage. And it seemed that one of the things that annoyed you most about being knifed and nearly murdered was that the dude ruined your suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a nice Ralph Lauren suit.
You write, I stood where I had almost been killed wearing, I have to tell you, my new Ralph Lauren suit.
Yeah.
And you felt whole.
That was one of the things I did for myself. To feel good.
The new suit worked.
The new suit worked. Yeah, I even got a discount.
Yeah. What, because the tailor was like, oh God, we need to get you a good new
just
suit?
Because they said, give you a discount.
You should look sharp for this moment?
No, I didn't tell them I was going to wear it to go back there. They just put up being nice to me.
Glad. So, a happy ending in its way. It's a lot to go through for a new Ralph Lauren suit. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This was fun.
This was, indeed.
The writer, Salman Rushdie, in our New York bureau, talking about his new memoir, Knife. To watch a 30-minute video of this conversation, you can visit NPR's YouTube channel, youtube.com/NPR.
That's it for this week on NPR's Book of the Day. If you want more, you can sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/newsletter/books. I'm Andrew Limbong. The podcast is produced by Isabella Gomez Sarmiento and edited by Megan Sullivan. Our founding editor is Petra Mayer. The show elements for this week were produced and edited by Adam Beard, Naina Rao, Matthew Sherman, Gabe O'Connor, Danny Hajek, Ashley Montgomery, Gurjeet Kaur, Melissa Gray, Megan Lim, and William Troop. Beth Donovan is our managing editor. Thanks for listening.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.